Good morning. I call the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, February 17, 2026, and the time is 8:02 a.m. Members present are Representative Kai Holland, Representative G. Nelson, turns out it's Garrett, Representative Steve St. Clair, Representative Carolyn Hall, and Co-Chair Donna Mears, and myself, Co-Chair Rebecca Himshute. We have a quorum to conduct business. I would like to remind members and staff to please silence your cell phones. And before we get started, I'd also like to thank our recording secretary, Sophia Tenney. And helping us from the Juno LIO today is Jude Augustine. And we have three items on the agenda today. We will hear HB 216, transfer of railroad land to Whittier public testimony, followed by HB 282, automated traffic safety cameras, which will have invited testimony only, and then HB 286, firefighter EMS property tax exemption, which will be also invited testimony only, and then any bills previously heard could come up. And we welcome Representative Prox at 8:04. So we're going to start today with HB 216, the first item on our agenda, and that is by Representative Holland. This is the second hearing on HB 216. Would you like to make any comments before we go to public testimony?
Great. Thank you, Chair Himshute. Just briefly, as a reminder, this bill is a necessary piece of legislation to allow the Alaska Railroad to transfer property to the city of Whittier. It's a statutory requirement that the railroad must seek approval from the legislature for land disposals. And that has been the case in other land transfers. The most recent one a couple years ago was the city of Nenana that did something similar to this. In this case, the railroad and the city have been working for about 2 years on a mutually beneficial transaction that includes five parcels. Currently, they're anticipating moving forward with three of the five that this legislation would authorize. The remaining two, we hope, will be part of ongoing negotiations. But again, this is a bill that is a legislative step in the railroad and the city being able to complete a mutually beneficial and mutually negotiated transaction. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the reminder on what we're talking about, and we're going to go to public testimony. I open public testimony, and we'll go first to anyone in the, is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? I don't see anyone, so we'll go online, and we'll start with Megan Clemens. Ms. Clemens, if you could put your name on the record, please, and provide your testimony.
So, good morning, Chair and committee members. This is Megan Clemens, External Affairs Director for the Alaska Railroad. To clarify, I don't have public testimony to offer today. The Railroad previously provided comments in support of this legislation, but simply available for questions.
Okay, thanks. We'll move on then to Jackie Wild. Also on my iPad, it says... Oh, okay. So you guys were both invited testimony before? Okay. So it says yes for testimony, but I think you're here for questions. So in that case, I don't see anyone else online, and I don't see anyone else in the room, so we will close public testimony. Are there any committee questions before we set the bill aside? Representative Prox.
Can we just vote to let it out of committee today?
I don't see any reason. We'll have to take an at ease. So we're back on record, and I think the best thing to do right now is to just set 216, was it, aside. So we're setting that one aside for now, and we have an amendment deadline on that bill for Friday, February 20th at noon. Okay, so the next item on our agenda is House Bill 282, Automated Traffic Safety Cameras. This is the first hearing on the bill. I'd like to invite Representative Fields and Michael Noddy to the table to introduce the bill. Good morning, Representative Fields. If you'd like to put yourself on record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Zach Fields, House District 17. I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill. You may be wondering, why did I introduce a bill about automatic safety cameras? Seems like a small thing. It's actually a very significant item when it comes to public safety. So just a little bit of background in my municipality, and I don't present this to say that Anchorage is the only place that matters. It's just the area I happen to know the most about because I live there and represent a district within Anchorage. So back when Dave Bronson was mayor, the city reported significant understaffing, including among police, and frankly, not having enough police to deal with anything except the most serious crimes, certainly not enough police to deal with traffic safety. And again, why does that matter? Well, we've had a very, very, very high rate of deaths on Anchorage roadways. So, you know, things like speeding, running red lights is not an academic issue, and it's an issue of life and death. Suzanne LaFrance is the current mayor of Anchorage. Certainly the city continues to try to fill positions, but despite a lot of hard work, there continue to be very high levels of police vacancies. And that means that it simply is not practical to do traffic enforcement only with officers doing enforcement in person. I reference that we have experienced a very high level of fatalities. These are some statistics about it. 15 deaths per year, once every 3 weeks, someone is dying on Anchorage roads. And unfortunately, both speeding and running red lights are part of that. And I'll get into a little bit of detail. What this bill does is allow automatic cameras that could record things like running a red light and speeding. So one of the intersections where people have died is the intersection of Minnesota and Benson and Northern Lights. It is physically impossible for a police officer in a car to conduct enforcement there because there's nowhere to put the car and have visibility from all angles so that a judge would say there was sufficient evidence to prosecute someone for running a red light and speeding. So in the absence of this bill, it is literally impossible for the police to do their job, even if they had enough staffing. Another example of an intersection where the size and configuration of the intersection makes enforcement impossible without cameras is 36th and Seward Highway. Very busy intersection. I'm sure we've all driven through there when there's been a collision. I've seen a lot of people running red lights and speeding through that intersection. If you talk to officers, they'll tell you it is physically impossible to conduct in-person enforcement at that intersection without traffic safety cameras to provide sufficient evidence. So this bill would be necessary simply because of police vacancies, certainly in the city in which I live. But even if you had sufficient staffing, the cameras would be necessary for some of these larger intersections where people have died because of the configuration of the intersection. Unfortunately, the rise in fatalities is a national trend. It's probably related to people texting while driving. I just wanted to provide a little detail about pedestrian fatalities and where they are occurring. They are way too numerous, and they are occurring all over the city. And if I realize this map may appear a little small on the screen, but there are a bunch of fatalities right there at Minnesota, Benson, Northern Lights, one of the other intersections that I mentioned where it's just impossible to do enforcement without traffic safety cameras. how frequent is running a red light? Hundreds of incidents per year. It's a very serious issue. I want to note there's a connection between running red lights and speeding. When people speed on corridors like Northern Lights, and they are able to run red lights without ever being penalized, it encourages them to speed more. If people knew that they would be penalized for running red lights, they would slow down, and that would be the number one thing that would reduce the number of fatalities. Cities across the country have been using technology to help with enforcement. I was actually shocked at the order of magnitude and growth of number of cities using cameras for enforcement. I want to emphasize that this bill does not mandate that any locality use automatic traffic safety cameras. All it does is allow them to, if in their judgment it is necessary for public safety. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. My staff can go through the sectional analysis. And again, I really appreciate the committee's time, and I know a lot of members of the committee have been engaged in pretty wide-ranging work on safety issues on our roadways. This is just one part of it.
Mr. Noddy, would you like to provide the sectional analysis?
thank you. Good morning, Representative Hemshute and Co-Chair Representative Mears and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Michael Noddy, and I will be providing the sectional analysis. So this is House Bill 282, Version A, Section 1, adds a new paragraph to Alaska Statutes 29.10.200, detailing the limitations of home rule powers. Section 2 amends Alaska Statutes 29.35 by adding a new section, 29.35.143, that reserves the regulation of automated traffic safety enforcement cameras to the state. This section applies to both home rule and to general law municipalities, and it applies to speed limit cameras, red light cameras, and railroad grade crossing cameras. This concludes the sectional analysis.
Thank you. And I think we're ready for committee questions. Are there questions on the bill before we go to invited testimony? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. In reading the sponsor statement and also the language, well, and with your presentation, but I don't see in the language or in statute where the red light enforcement has to be done solely by police officers. So the question is there anything that precludes Anchorage right now or any other municipality from installing red light cameras?
Through the chair, yes. There's a provision in the Anchorage Charter that dates back about 30 years. So in the absence of this bill, Anchorage voters would have to run a voter initiative to change the charter. Given the urgency of traffic safety issues, I thought that this might be a more expeditious way to give the mayor, assembly, and police department the ability, if they want, to do automatic red light enforcement.
Follow up. So in the absence of them doing it, this bill actually would preclude any other municipality from ever opting out in the future, correct?
Through the chair, no, it leaves it permissive to localities. It does not mandate that they use automatic red light enforcement. It gives them the ability to, if they wish, their local governments.
Last follow-up. Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Right, it doesn't mandate that they have to, but it does say that they may not ban the use of automated safety or traffic safety cameras. So if a municipality wanted to do that in the future, for whatever reason, they would be unable to do so.
Through the chair, they could simply not implement automatic red light enforcement if they did not want to. I don't believe in unfunded mandates.
Correct, but this would stop them from doing it. I'm sorry, through the chair. Madam Chair.
No, like, it's good back and forth.
This would actually change the law to where it says plainly, provide a statute where a municipality may not ban the use of automated traffic safety cameras.
Through the chair, this fixes an issue with the Anchorage Charter.
Mm-hmm.
because any other locality could choose not to implement automatic red light enforcement. I think it's a semantic issue. I mean, what's the difference between not doing it and banning it? If, you know, the Matsu Borough said, you know what, we don't want to do it, nothing makes them do it. Nothing in this bill makes them do it.
Ma'am, one comment.
Of course.
I don't see it as a semantic issue. I see it as, even if they won't do it, we're telling them they can't do it. And there is a difference there.
Through the chair, if Representative Nelson is interested, we can work with Ledge Legal on whether there are other ways of phrasing that language. I'm certainly not fixated on those particular words. Like I said, all I want to do is give every locality the ability to make that choice.
Could be an offline discussion.
Yep.
Okay, sounds good. I think I had Representative Holland next.
Okay. Thank you. Through the chair, two things I was curious about. First off is that the language here refers to automatic traffic safety cameras. And in the description, what I've heard has been the notion of enforcement, which I don't think I see enforcement in the language of the bill. And I'm wondering if you can clarify the perhaps subtlety, but maybe there's something important to understand in the language that the bill offers versus this notion of enforcement. And I guess my second question that maybe I'll just layer into this is, it seems like Anchorage had tried traffic enforcement cameras, I think 15, 20 years ago. It came in temporarily. I don't remember that it lasted more than a year. There was a lot of public pushback about camera-initiated traffic tickets, and I think they disappeared pretty quickly. So I'm kind of interested in the enforcement aspect of what this bill is doing and the subtlety of traffic safety cameras and some history, if that provides context for what we're doing here.
Representative Fields?
Sure. Through the chair, I think it was the late 90s when Anchorage tried traffic safety cameras. Obviously, the technology has changed. So the bill simply allows use of cameras. Use of cameras are necessary to do enforcement. Give you an example. Right now, if a police officer waits at a corner in their car, and they have cameras in their car, so they have to document a car speeding and or running a red light. Both may be occurring at the same time. Because a lot of Anchorage's roads are so large, the camera that's located in a police officer's car doesn't actually document someone breaking the law with enough detail to prosecute that person. So today, apparently, and this is just based on talking to the police chief, the standard of evidence that is acceptable to actually prosecute someone for speeding and running a red light requires photography or video from multiple perspectives to conclusively demonstrate that someone was speeding and or ran a red light. And you just think about, you know, very wide intersection, a police car, your cameras may be 3 feet off the ground. You may not be able to see the stop bars to show that someone ran a red light. When you have the cameras higher up, you're going to have a better perspective. In a lot of cases, to complement an officer who may be on the ground. And typically the way that other cities use these cameras, they don't put out cameras everywhere and just start sending people tickets everywhere. Typically, they'll deploy cameras in a corridor, try to get better compliance with speed and obeying traffic lights, and, you know, using the very limited resources of a team of police officers, they may then shift to another corridor. And typically cities, of course, prioritize the most dangerous corridors, the places where the most deaths have been occurring. That's how it works in practice.
Can I follow up, please?
Follow up.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you for that. So can you clarify for me, would these traffic safety cameras, is the intent that they are capable of actually automating the enforcement, or is the intent, from what I just heard you describe, it sounds like they are a source of visual evidence, but it sounds like maybe it still requires a live police officer to have been there to actually go and issue the ticket, but now that officer will have access to a bunch of new video records in there. So I'm trying to clarify, is this going to automated red light tickets, that is, the cameras do it all and get the license plate off the vehicle through image analysis and send the ticket out, or is this intended to be an additional evidence data available, but still requiring the officer had to be there to realize that there was an infraction, and then he's using this as a resource. Thank you.
Through the chair, this bill does not require that an officer be there. I'm simply acknowledging that in the real world, officers are often necessary to conduct enforcement. You know, one of the reasons is Alaska doesn't require a front license plate. So, you know, in the winter, you're not going to be able to see that back license plate even with very good imagery. So under this bill, if a locality was able to configure cameras in a way and wanted to do automatic enforcement, they could. I don't really foresee that happening at a broad scale.
Cool. Thank you.
Okay. Next up, I had Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, I don't know which highways, but I think the Seward Highway in Anchorage, as an example, is a state highway as opposed to a municipal highway. Does that just apply to who maintains it? Or I guess the question would be, would the state already have the authority to implement this on, for example, the Seward Highway, because it's a state highway?
Through the chair, great question, Representative Prox. I don't actually know if the state can implement automatic traffic safety cameras over the current prohibition in the municipal charter. I do know that the Anchorage Police Department conducts enforcement along Seward Highway in the urban part of Anchorage, whereas state troopers do enforcement along the Glen within the municipality of Anchorage and Eagle River and Chugiak. So state ownership does not necessarily mean state employees do the enforcement, but that's a good thing for us to research whether the state could post these cameras. Other state roads do include Benson and Northern Lights. But as a practical matter, Anchorage Police Department conducts all enforcement within the urban part of Anchorage. State troopers may, of course, respond to an incident if they happen to be passing through, but APD is primary for enforcement within Anchorage.
I think that does the trick.
Okay, great. Representative St. Clair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, Representative Fields, so this is an Anchorage problem.
Through the chair, I do not know if there are other localities that have this issue. I am aware that it is an Anchorage problem.
Follow-up? Madam Chair, could we get, for later on, get some invited testimony from APD and legal? I think, looking across the room here, I'm the only one that has written a traffic ticket in the state of Alaska. Granted, it was 30 years ago. On Fort Wainwright, but I'd like to know about the burden of proof, because we just started getting dash cams at that time, and it was, you know, the officer usually said, you know, I saw it, I swear to it, affirm, whatever. And video evidence wasn't as required as it is now. So if we could just have those two in for invited testimony so we can get some clarification, because I know Representative Fields is not an expert when it comes to traffic laws, et cetera, et cetera.
Through the chair, I will pass on that request. I think it's a great idea.
Okay. Seeing no further questions from the committee, I think we'll go to our invited testifiers. But first, we're going to take a really quick at ease. Okay, we're back on the record, and we're going to go now to invited testimony for House Bill 282, and we'll start with Lindsay Hajduk. I'm not sure I'm saying that correctly. You can help me with that. Please put your name on record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Lindsay Hajduk, and I'm a resident of Anchorage who bikes, drives to work, walks in my neighborhood every day, and also prefers to take the bus to the airport when I can. I've been a pedestrian and bicycle advocate for many years, but unfortunately I've seen our roads just become more dangerous. I also serve as the Director of Community Engagement and External Affairs at NeighborWorks Alaska, where we work to strengthen local communities, and transportation safety is a big topic that often bubbles to the top. Here in Anchorage, we're suffering from a transportation safety crisis. For the last 2 years, 15 pedestrians were killed, including one bicyclist last year. If you include everyone who's killed in vehicle collisions on our roads, that's about 30 people each year in Anchorage, which is just unacceptable. Anchorage's Vision Zero initiative was launched back in 2016 with the goal of eliminating all traffic-related deaths and serious injuries. And one of the first strategies that we identified in 2018 in our Vision Zero action plan was for automated traffic enforcement cameras. They're proven to reduce red light running and severity of collisions at intersections. In 2024, when we had 6 pedestrians killed in just a single month, the Muni and state came together again under a Vision Zero work group and again identified automated traffic enforcement as a key strategy. For us, it's common sense. Our cities struggle to have enough police officers, let alone enough to focus on traffic enforcement in known corridors of serious collision. So red light cameras would be just another tool that could be part of the solution to reducing the severity of injuries and fatalities. Unfortunately, the path to making that happen in Anchorage is very challenging, so I believe HB 282 can help make Alaska's roads safer. By allowing the state to have regulation authority over automated enforcement cameras, we can create a path forward in Anchorage and a path forward in other communities across the state if they would like to pursue it. Right now, red light running and right turn hooks are some of the leading causes of crashes, but they're also just a norm in Anchorage driving. So by putting automated traffic enforcement on the table, we'll have a new tool to look at, and it could literally save lives. So I encourage a deep analysis to this and moving this bill forward. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. And we'll go our questions. Okay, Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Hajduk, do you envision enforcement to be automatic camera? I don't know how the system works, but the system detects somebody running a red light. Does it automatically take a picture of the vehicle and the license plate, and then a citation can be issued based on that evidence? Or are you thinking that this supplements something else?
Ms. Hajduk?
Thank you, through the chair. There are hundreds of communities across the country who have used this. And I was recently in a meeting with the Anchorage Police Department who had brought up these red light cameras as another tool that they're looking to that would help with the lack of enforcement on our streets. So I do see it as in key intersections, especially areas where there are a high number of collisions and fatalities. We have a lot of data. There could be some of that automatic ticketing that helps deter and change people's behaviors in these key areas.
Representative Prox?
Right. Thank you. If I may just, I guess, re-ask the question. I understand the benefit, but my question is whether the citation, if you will, would be issued by the machine rather than a police officer, a human being. I don't know how this works in other cities.
Ms. Hajduk, do you have a response to that?
Thanks, through the chair. I don't know what this process would be. I believe each municipality, if they wanted to pursue it, could create a system locally, and that could include a police officer reviewing any footage or citations that are issued, but I'm not sure what it could look like in our community.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank
Great.
You.
Great. Thank you for your time, Ms. Hajduk. We're going to go now to a second testifier, Jade Powell with the North Star Community Council. Could you please put your name on the record and provide your testimony.
Hi, good morning. My name is Jade Powell, and as you mentioned, I'm a board member of North Star Community Council, but I'm here speaking personally, although this is definitely a topic of interest. Can you all hear me okay? I'm on speaker.
We hear you fine. Usually it's better off the speaker, but so far so good.
Okay. So I will try to keep this short. I'm not necessarily an expert in traffic law, as someone mentioned on the line earlier, but I have been in the car twice when my parents were cited with a red light camera and received a ticket down in Washington, where we used to live. And I also am somewhat of the median voter in terms of the way I get around Anchorage. Like many people who cannot afford a car, I often walk, bike, or bus to work and to businesses here in North Star, but I also drive. I'm a car enthusiast. I own two cars, one of which is an ice race car, so I certainly enjoy driving as well. And a couple things that come to mind for this bill that I think are important to note. As you heard with the discussion previously, their bill is somewhat sparse on details. It doesn't necessarily prescribe a process or a standard to municipalities, which I think is good. I think every municipality is going to have different feelings about who and how the citations for these sorts of things should be issued. But I think clearing the path to ensure that that is an option available to municipalities without undue burden is really important, because I think that red light cameras are an important safety tool. For example, in Bremerton, Washington, where one of those tickets happened when I was with my mom and their F-250 Super Duty, and I think it's good that there is a red light camera in downtown Bremerton where lots of people walk, and to ensure that my mom and her F-250 Super Duty doesn't get too comfortable with pulling through right turns on red lights. The bumper is about as tall as my shoulders, and I'm a very tall person. So I think it is ensuring that negligence doesn't creep into our daily lives. And she was a recent transplant to Bremerton, so it was frustrating for her that she wasn't used to that camera, but she hasn't gotten a ticket since because she's now used to those cameras being at those intersections, and it helps her be more careful. And I have a very strong feeling about the necessity of these as a safety tool, because my girlfriend almost was hit right in front of me as I was sitting at a stoplight on Benson Boulevard. I was driving to run an errand, sitting at the stoplight first in the row, and I see my girlfriend coming home from work at the intersection of Arctic and Benson on the crosswalk. And the light turns green, her crosswalk turns to walk, and it's her turn to go as a pedestrian and a cyclist in waiting right there where she's supposed to, next to the crosswalk. And she proceeds in the intersection right as a car races out in front of her and just about hits her. The car stopped suddenly, and thankfully she hadn't proceeded in the intersection yet, but she was almost hit right in front of my eyes. Her and I were also almost hit in a crosswalk together on a bicycle, a tandem bicycle, in a very similar situation by a person with a bike on top of their car. So they were clearly, sensitive to the issue, but still, negligence creeps in. And I think it's important to have this available as a safety tool. I also, as a median voter sort of person, have very strong and complicated feelings about the state and the role of the state. And by state, I mean government in general. I don't love the way that Bremerton has implemented their traffic cameras. They spend a lot of money to this contractor who makes a lot of money off of the city running the system, and they spend a lot of money on police time writing those tickets. But I don't think that's necessarily a problem inherent to traffic cameras. I think it's a problem inherent to the way they implemented it, and I have trust that Anchorage would be more responsible if implementing this, as would other municipalities if they were given the option. So I think it's really important to just allow this to be on the table without undue burden. I think that, like many things in life, traffic cameras are going to result in a lot of opposition from the public, but perhaps the benefits will show themselves. Anchorage tried to recently pass a right turn on red ban in downtown Anchorage and couldn't manage to do it. And even a legislator in Anchorage who lives downtown and is affected by this, just didn't really see the point of it. And I think that's an example of the way in which we just don't assume that these things are going to be that helpful. And the political will, frankly, isn't there to overcome the threshold needed in Anchorage to implement traffic cameras, even though I think everyone hates how dangerous it is. Everyone is constantly complaining about people running red lights. I saw someone blatantly run a red light 2 days ago in the car. And having the option available more easily, I think, is an incredibly important safety tool. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for your time. Are there any questions for Mr. Powell? Okay, seeing no questions, we'll move on to our final invited testimony today, and that is Nancy Pease with the Rabbit Creek Community Council. If you could please put your name on the record and provide your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Nancy Pease. Although I am a longtime board member and past chair of Rabbit Creek Community Council in South Anchorage, I am testifying today on my own behalf. And I am very excited to have the automated safety camera legislation to enable local governments to consider that for their traffic safety for a couple of reasons. I've been a longtime planner and also just a self-educated person about traffic planning and management. And this tool, automated safety cameras, is one of the, you know, really appropriate tools to have. It, the best traffic enforcement is in a sense self-enforcing, that it encourages driver behavior to change. So you have a chance to avoid this entirely, this the penalty of a traffic safety camera entirely. The other important qualities are that it be equitable and effective and cost effective. And again, this measure, automated safety cameras, checks all three boxes. So we don't, you know, we don't have to have the inequity of somebody who might get off because of the kind of car they're driving or the time of day. And it doesn't require the very expensive services of a sworn law enforcement officer. So this is a really wise measure for communities to be able to consider. Another concern, perhaps, is that this creates an additional type of surveillance of behavior. And I think that's a red herring. In this day and age, surveillance in public spaces is common and expected and even desired as a safety measure. People want to know that they are safe from the behavior of other people. And this is, you know, cameras are everywhere. We know this. So, and then just my comments here are quite brief, but I think all of us have experience of either catastrophe or near misses with red light runners. And in my family, in 2024 at C Street and 36th in Anchorage, a pickup truck ripped through a red light at 40 miles an hour and T-boned a small Toyota, smashing it into two other cars and demolishing it. My brother was in that car, and it's only by inches, mere inches, that he survived. It struck just forward of the passenger compartment, and no airbag could have saved him from severe injury or death at those speeds. And by the way, the driver, who was not intoxicated in any way, merely extremely inattentive, escaped with a $200 municipal fine. So that was just, you know, injustice upon injury. Another family experience is that the family member who is neurologically diverse and not able to drive, but very agile and physical and loves to get around on foot and bus, he spent 5 years living near the intersection of Minnesota and Benson, again in Anchorage. Notorious for killing people, vehicles killing people at that intersection. Because of his neurodiversity, I was always in great, great fear that he would not check, double check, and triple check to make sure that someone wasn't running the red light. You know, he depended on the crosswalks. He did manage in his 5 years near that intersection to survive, but it shouldn't have been a great cause of concern. And with red light cameras, automated safety cameras, to not only to help to shape driver behavior, that would have been a much less concern. So, again, this is a really important tool to give local municipalities to increase traffic safety. So thank you very much for the chance to testify.
Thank you for your time this morning. Do we have any questions for Ms. Pease? Great. Let's go back to the bill and see if there are any questions. I do have a question, and I also wanted to mention that Andy Mills from DOT is online for questions if anyone has questions for DOT in this situation. Rep. Fields, could you go back a few slides to the one with the annual traffic report, that one? What is the source? Is this, are we talking about Anchorage here, or what is the source for this data?
I'll turn to my staff, Michael Noddy. Thank you.
Good morning. Through the chair, the source for this was a for the record, my name is Michael Noddy. The source for this was provided for us through the organization Vision Zero. So that's where we got these statistics from.
And Mr. Noddy, quick follow-up. Is this for Anchorage specifically then?
Through the chair, for the record, Michael Noddy, yes, these statistics are specifically for Anchorage. I submitted a request through Fairbanks Police Department and the Juneau Police Department for similar statistics and a similar time range for all three categories, the failure to yield, running a stop sign, and running a red light. And I'm still waiting to receive those statistics. So when we get those, I can submit those for the record as well.
And then I had one last question on that. So these are, we can assume that these are officers stopping individuals who've completed this kind of infraction and issued a citation of some sort. That's from that kind of data?
Through the chair, for the record, Michael Noddy, yes, that's accurate, yes.
So it's a matter of the officer being in the right place at the right time with the right tools to be able to capture that someone has run the stop sign or the red light. Okay. Great. Thanks. Additional questions? Representative St. Clair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fields, I have a lot of questions on this, and I can probably get with you and your staff after this. But what your staff just said, I don't think is practical, because you can't – how is a police officer's car going to link with a camera without any additional infrastructure, whether it be Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, et cetera? In the majority of the cities that have traffic cams, it is actually outsourced to another organization. They issue the citations with authority granted to them by either the city or the state. So the zero fiscal note, I don't understand that, and I'm still trying to figure out the technology that would allow an officer to basically sit here and watch a camera around the corner and then take a snapshot, and then you said front and rear plates. But I'll get with your staff after this and identify some of my questions. Yeah. Thank you.
And do you want to respond?
Through the chair, I can answer part of that. So you're right. One structure is to contract it. But as the police chief was describing to me at some of these intersections where right now they're just too big to collect adequate photographic evidence, I think the typical camera retains the data these days for about 3 days before it deletes. So if you were doing in-person enforcement, say at Northern Lights in Minnesota, one of these very deadly intersections where in-person enforcement is impossible, and the officer does pull someone over, they would pull the data from the camera for that time, or at 36 and New Seward. So there are circumstances where the officer would pull someone over, pull the data, and put that in a report to enable issuing a citation.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Okay. Representative Prox?
Thank you. I have a question for Mr. Mills.
Okay. Mr. Mills, if you are online, could you put your name on record and Representative Prox can ask his question?
Yep, Andy Mills, legislative liaison at the Alaska Department of Transportation.
Good morning.
Question?
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Mills. From the DOT's perspective, the DOT does traffic accident studies, and comes up with ways to reduce, engineering ways to reduce accidents. Is an automatic safety camera recognized as a way to reduce traffic accidents as opposed to roundabouts? Don't laugh.
Hey,
we have a personal issue going on,
Andy,
with roundabouts.
You're not allowed to laugh, but please please provide your response.
Madam Co-Chair, of course. Through the Chair, to Representative Crox, on red light traffic enforcement, I did look and discuss with our statewide traffic engineer, Pam Golden, who is on a flight. She would be the one normally monitoring this piece of legislation for our department. It is noted that ASHTO, which is the American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials, essentially other state DOTs, and other federal bodies have researched this quite thoroughly, and there's even meta-analysis of different studies that do show that red light running enforcement, and I believe in traffic enforcement through cameras even, do show, I believe the range is between 18 and 25%, depending on location, implementation, and such. I would note in Alaska, of course, there are the added challenges of maintenance, that if you address the ice and other winter factors at intersections, that, of course, has a direct impact on those folks who would decelerate or not run a red light, as opposed to trying to get through the light quickly because they do not feel they can stop in time. And then also in Alaska, of course, the ability to read a plate with what is on or covering the plate can be an issue. But I believe that's mitigated across other states because there are active products that seek to thwart red light traffic camera enforcement with something that looks clear to the visual eye, but a camera would not be able to read the plate itself.
Follow-up, Rep. Prox?
Yes, thank you. Through the Chair, just to clarify, is it correct then to say that the DOT could consider automatic, what do they call them, safety cameras, as opposed to engineering a complex intersection to reduce traffic accidents?
Mr. Mills?
I see. Through the Chair, to Representative Prax, I see the comparison, and now I understand the roundabout reference, with no laughter, of course. There is a difference in different countermeasures. What a traffic study, and folks do not want to hear that we're studying something, they want the action, and we understand that, but a study really does inform the geometry of that particular intersection or area of road, and therefore the countermeasure should not be presupposed because you're looking at the turning movement, the recent, somewhat recent crash history and many other factors. So a roundabout versus red light traffic camera enforcement would really be an evaluation that is not a simple this is better or that is more appropriate.
Right. But follow up. It could be considered as an alternative. I mean, that is allowable in the design world.
Mr. Mills?
Through the Chair, to Representative Prox, that is correct. And okay. So areas where you cannot potentially have a roundabout because of queue locking, I believe it's called, when you have so much traffic from coming from one direction, it will lock out others' ability to enter that roundabout. That's where you would probably maintain a signalized intersection, and therefore to get the safety improvements you're looking for, one of the possibilities certainly could be camera enforcement, just as you could provide physical or officer enforcement at that location for periods of time as well.
Okay.
And I think Representative Fields wanted to add a comment.
Yeah, just through the Chair, Representative Prox, there's some intersections, for example, Seward Highway, Minnesota, at Benson and Northern Lights, or 36, that are too high volume for a traffic circle to work. And this would be a solution, in some cases, in conjunction with engineered solutions. So, for example, on northbound A Street, Department of Transportation eliminated the double right-hand turn because that was contributing to collisions. However, my wife used to work at that intersection. She's seen someone die at that intersection. I would argue you still want the automatic safety cameras because they are important for both speed and red light running. So in some cases, you would have multiple solutions that could be considered by engineers.
Okay. And I think, Rep. Holland, I'm just going to make the comment, though, in certain European cities, you have 8-lane traffic circles. So I would say never say never. Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you. Through the chair, I just had a quick follow-up to Mr. Mills on his comments. Mr. Mills, you had mentioned an 18% figure, but I didn't quite catch the site or the explanation. Was that an 18% reduction in red light running because of this type of camera enforcement? Could you just clarify what that 18% number was and what it was, I think, suggesting in terms of effectiveness of some red light enforcement?
And Mr. Mills, if you could put your name on record and respond to the question, please.
Again, for the record, Andy Mills. Through the chair to Representative Holland, thank you for the chance to clarify. You are correct that the range of various studies was an 18 to 25 reduction in red light running. It is good to mention on top of that that, again, any reduction in red light running by sort of different countermeasures, but this included, can result in sort of a sliding scale of severity going down. So fatalities may become serious injuries would become more minor injuries. So the net effect can be safety gains that are not strictly a data point of a crash. And so that's the point, is that the red light running is the figure I noted, but there are sort of a sliding scale of safety reductions for any type of countermeasure that reduces red light running.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Are there any other questions before we... Representative Hall?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. It's more of a comment followed by a question. And the comment is, this bill is particularly timely for me because I held a constituent event on Saturday, and we talked about a variety of concerns that my constituents have, but the one that stood out to me the most was this issue of pedestrian deaths, bicyclist deaths, in particular in the Spinard neighborhood, which a portion of which I represent. My constituents are really frustrated. They're really, frankly, like, pissed off that nothing from their perspective seems to be done at the local or state level. So I'm very interested in doing the committee work to make this bill as strong and as palatable as possible statewide. So I'm eager to see and hear what comes out of the conversation between Representative Nelson and Representative Fields. Additionally, I'm very eager to hear from APD, and I'm curious to hear what the other urban communities think and what their experiences are. The question that I have, and thank you, Madam Co-Chair, is on the slide after this, I'm curious to know what that red line is over far left. Maybe I missed it during the presentation.
Go ahead.
Not if you could put your name on record.
Excuse me. For the record, Michael Motti, through the chair, Representative Hall. This statistic was provided through, I believe it was called ATE, but it was a historical study on a previous, study on what a red light traffic enforcement would look like in Anchorage. And so the 1995 red bar is the marker for when that study was first initiated. And so it's just showing from that time over the past 30 years that there's been a significant increase in communities using speed safety cameras.
Follow-up? Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Through the Co-Chair, so this is a snapshot in time of when that first study took place to where we are today. Am I following?
For the record, Michael Motti, and through the chair to Representative Hall, yes, that's accurate. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I apologize, Co-Chair Mears had questions, and I overlooked her. So, Co-Chair Mears?
Thank you. I also have a comment and then a clarifying question for Representative Fields. I've been told the three big things for safety are engineering, enforcement, and education, and they all kind of go together. And through the chair to Representative Fields, I'm thinking about our our state and where the troopers have jurisdiction and the much more dense areas where there's a lot of local enforcement. And so just clarifying that this bill gives the option for those local law enforcement to design and implement the programs. It's not a state program, it's local programs that we're allowing to happen.
Through the chair, yes, and that is why there's not a fiscal note to Representative Sinclair's earlier question. We're not paying for any of this. All we're doing is letting local law enforcement figure it out.
And I'll just comment for the two traffic lights in my 21 communities. I'm grateful for that option for localities to make their own decisions. Okay, seeing no further questions, we are going to set this bill aside and take a quick at-ease to get ready for House Bill 286. At-ease. We are back on record, and we're going to take up House Bill 286, the final item on our agenda today. This is the first hearing on the bill, and I'd like to invite Representative Elam and Kendra Broussard to the table to introduce the bill. Welcome.
Representative Elam, for the record here, thank you, Chair Hemshoot and Chair Mears and the members of the committee for hearing House Bill 286. If you would.
Through the chair, my name is Kendra Broussard, for the record.
And so thank you again. It's a pretty straightforward bill, and so I don't have a large presentation. We may potentially have some invited testimony, but each of you should have received already some emails as far as written testimony. House Bill 286 is a bill that is hoping to provide some tools for our fire and EMS teams around the state of Alaska. Municipalities are able to incentivize volunteer programs right now to the tune of about a $10,000 property exemption that state statute limits that. And so my communities have reached out. We've always struggled with volunteerism. I don't know if any of you guys have noticed, but people wanting to volunteer for this kind of work has been on decline. And so unfortunately, we're trying to kind of help with that. And the paid staff have to work extra hours, overtime, lots of extra work that happens there. And so what this bill's intent is to be able to give the municipalities some tools to be able to potentially recruit and retain their paid staff, but then also to recruit the volunteer staff to be able to provide some of those services, especially in areas where maybe they don't have paid staff. So in my communities of, say, Seward and Bear Creek, Nikiski, Sterling, Funny River, we have paid staff, but Cooper Landing, for example, does not have a fire service area. And so it is a complete volunteer district. And so what this allows the municipality to do is create an exemption that they feel is appropriate to be able to better recruit volunteer staff.
Okay. With that explanation, could we maybe get the sectional analysis, and then we'll go to questions?
Through the chair, for the record, my name is Kendra Broussard. Section 1 amends Alaska Statute 29.49.050R. by deleting the statutory cap of not to exceed the $10,000 of the assessed value on the optional municipal property tax exemption for qualifying volunteer firefighter or volunteer provider of emergency, medical, or mobile intensive care paramedic services. And Section 1 also clarifies that the municipalities can determine the exemption amount by ordinance if they choose to have the exemption. And Section 2 provides an immediate effective date.
Okay, thank you. And before we go to questions, I wanted to let everyone know that we have Dan Moeller, the State Assessor for Community and Regional Affairs Division, online. And it says that Sandra Moeller is in the room. I'm going to guess that maybe she's online, and she's the Division of Community and Regional Affairs, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development Director. So those folks are available for questions as well. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you. Through the chair, I think I'd like to address this question both to the sponsor, but perhaps also to Mr. Mueller. And I'm just curious about some background about why the state, to begin with, has been specifying and limiting property tax exemptions that can be granted by a local municipality. It seems on the surface like we would just let municipalities decide how to manage their local property taxes and how much they charge and who they exempt and why they exempt them. And I'm curious if there's history on why this is here and why we're having to undo it. But maybe there's some ramifications that I'm overlooking.
Let's start with the bill sponsor, and then we'll go to Mr. You said Mueller. Was it Mr. Nelson, the state assessor? That
I thought I heard you say Mr. Mueller. So
I said Mr. Mueller, but
I may
Nelson.
Be mistaken. Okay,
yeah,
thank you for the clarification.
That's operator error on my side. Sorry. Representative Elam, did you want to take a crack at that?
Thank you. And through the chair, I appreciate the question. Myself, personally, I prefer to defer to local control as well. I'm really not sure why the exemptions have been put in, but they are definitely everywhere. And so I don't have a good answer. We can do some research to see if we can't find out. But generally speaking, the way that it has been often explained to me is that it's kind of an attempt to kind of equalize out so that a large section of your municipality wasn't being burdened or getting the tax exemption, and then small sections of your communities were, you know, basically not having to participate in property taxes for some of the services, and so more of an equal distribution. In situations like this, I see it as an opportunity for really the municipality to be able to forego a certain amount of tax revenues from properties. But in the grand scheme or scale of what it costs and what values a volunteer might bring to the community, the numbers are quite nice.
I'll just add, at one point the state reimbursed for these various, yeah, and so capping it made sense from the point of view of the state. But Mr. Nelson, I apologize for having your name wrong earlier. Could you provide, maybe put your name on record and provide a response to the question? And if we can repeat the question if you need.
Through the chair, Dan Nelson, state assessor. Actually, I do not know why they put a limit on the optional assessment of $10,000. But we can do some research and look at that, why there was that limit of $10,000.
And I'll just offer once again, I don't know if it was all of these exemptions were reimbursed by the state, but I think the senior one was for sure. So I'm taking a stab at that. I think it'd be great to get actual information, not just what I think. And it's possible that Sandra Mueller has some background on that. Is it okay if we go there? Okay. Sandra, Director Mueller, if you're there, could you provide some insight, put your name on record, and respond to that question?
Yes. Good morning, Chair Hemshoot. This is Sandra Mueller. I'm the Director of Division of Community Regional Affairs in Anchorage. And thank you for the question. At the division, we do support maximum local self-governance. So as we look at legislation and proposed legislation, we prefer to have an option and have each municipality be able to decide and choose. I do not have any additional info on the limits, although many of the exemptions do have limits. And I again, we'd have to look into why there was any justification for a dollar amount. But I think what the representative presented, the sponsor, is probably most accurate, is looking at being able to limit and provide localities and the state for the bill that the statute that you mentioned on the reimbursement that the state did. There was ability to try to limit it. So that's, if there's any specific questions, I could try to answer some, but that's what I know on this tax exemption.
Thank you, Director Mueller. We do have one invited testifier.
Oh, let's go with that.
Okay, let's go to invited testimony and Fire Chief Roy Browning from Central Emergency Services in Soldotna is online. And Chief Browning, if you could put your name on record and provide your testimony, I think it will add context to the conversation.
Good morning, members of the House Community and Regional Affairs. My name is Roy Browning. I'm the Chief of Central Emergency Services, for the record. I serve as the Chief of a Combination Fire Department. We have approximately 30 volunteer firefighters who serve alongside our career staff. My department serves five communities, and we have 30 volunteers and 50 career. This would serve the Kenai Peninsula Borough for our volunteers. All but 12 out of 13 fire departments use volunteers heavily. Across the Kenai Peninsula, we are seeing growing challenges in recruiting and retaining volunteer firefighters and EMS providers. It's not only an Alaska issue, but also a national issue. However, we feel that some incentives like this would help us with recruiting and retention. House Bill 286 also allows the local municipalities to decide whether to adopt the property tax exemption and determine that amount of that exemption. This would be a reasonable way to recognize the essential public safety role that the volunteers provide, and I'll stand for questions.
Do we have any questions for Fire Chief Browning? Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, Chief Browning, do you have, I guess, an estimate for your department as far as the volunteers, the proportion of volunteers that own their residence versus the those that are just renting from someone?
Through the chair, answer the question. In my department, approximately out of the 30 volunteers, about 15 to 17 own their own properties and can file for the exemption. Some of the others are a little bit younger and are renting.
Okay. Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you. Through the chair to the chief, I'm just curious, the bill identifies this as an exemption that would be available for somebody who's certified as a firefighter. And I'm just curious in general, is that certification something that is essentially identifying somebody that's probably a full-time person putting in a lot of hours per month, or is a certification pretty easy that somebody who maybe volunteers 1 or 2 hours a month may or may not show up from month to month is able to be certified to qualify? So I guess kind of what's the threshold of somebody being a certified firefighter that would then qualify for this? And are there some lines so that this is incentivizing and rewarding people that are really putting in that extraordinary level of effort, as opposed to everybody down the street would start signing up to become a firefighter? But I understand certification here, and so as a chief, maybe you can just explain the certification process and the threshold that indicates.
Chief Browning, if you could put your name on record again and let us know, what does it take to be a certified firefighter?
Through the chair, this is Chief Roy Browning for the record, and thank you for the question, Representative Holland. Yes, the statute defines that you must be a certified firefighter one, which would be the state recognized certification process. Once that person has that certification, and it also includes EMTs or emergency medical technicians would have to be certified at that level. The second clause in the requirement for the assessment also defines what each department defines as active members. So out of some of the 30 that I mentioned in my department earlier, some of those are not active, therefore their names are not put on the list, and then the fire chief would write a memo to the assessing department to validate those as active members.
Okay. Are there additional questions from the committee?
Can I follow up?
Oh, sure. Representative Holland, follow up.
Thanks. I'm sorry. I'm just quickly trying to catch up through the chair, perhaps to the sponsor. I liked and I appreciated your note just a moment ago about this being for active members. I'm trying to quickly see in the language of Section 1 if it specifies active members. Maybe I'm missing it. I can't find it here looking quickly here. I'm intrigued with that as being kind of a threshold for some controls on this, but I don't think I see it here.
I think Chief Browning talked about people being on an inactive list. Do you want to respond to that, Representative Elam?
Thank you, and I appreciate Chief's answer as well. So myself personally, I served for the better part of 8-9 years as a volunteer firefighter EMT as well. And so from my experience, being active, the language within the bill doesn't specifically say that they have to be active, but the requirements are also defined by the department a bit. And so it works kind of in conjunction with your certification process. And so for myself, whenever I was a firefighter, I had a lot of ongoing continuing education that I had to do to maintain my certifications. When I did my structure, my wildland fire, each of those programs were 6 to 12 months. My EMT certification took well over a year whenever I was doing IVs and airways. It was a lot of ongoing continuing education. So to maintain this, you're going to have to be active within the volunteer community. It's not really going to be something that you can abuse very easily, but anytime there's anything out there, people can abuse these programs. What this is intended to do is help us help the fire departments with the people that want to volunteer.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any additional questions on this? Oh, Rep. Hall. Yeah, I have you right here, and I just don't look at my list.
I'm easily forgettable.
Oh, I would never say that.
I'm joking. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Chief, thank you for your time this morning. I'm curious, what other recruitment or retainment measures have you or other folks within your orbit done to boost those kinds of the volunteer numbers for firefighter and EMS?
Chief Browning?
Through the chair, Chief Browning with Central Emergency Services. We've done quite a bit in our department, and obviously we go to career type events through our high school. We have started a youth program through the Boy Scouts of America Fire Exploring that takes leadership from ages 14, and we've also done some recruiting all across the community.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Sounds great. Now, are there any other questions from the committee? Okay, thank you, Chief Browning, for your testimony this morning. And with no additional questions, we're going to go ahead and set this bill aside. Oh, hang on. Sorry. Representative Prox, under the wire.
Under the wire. Yes, I have a question for the state assessor. Was that Mr. Nelson?
Correct.
Yes, through the chair. Mr. Nelson, Well, the gentleman that was the Fairbanks North Star Borough's property tax assessor used to remind the assembly that a property tax is an assessment on the value of the property, not who owns it or what it is used for. And we've long ago departed from that principle, and we're getting an exemption for, I think it started out with, well, residential, and then senior citizens, and then it expanded to several other groups. And this opens up another way for a property tax assessment. At what point does it just simply be impractical to have a tax on property? Equity issues here.
Mr. Nelson?
The chair, representative, my name is Dan Nelson, state assessor, representative Prax. Could you repeat that question?
The granting exemptions to an ad valorem tax. Well, let's start out with who owns. If you own your residence, you're eligible for a property tax exemption. If you're over 65, you get more. And we're departing from the whole concept of an ad valorem tax. And it's becoming, well, I don't know what kind of a tax, but at what point should we just abandon the concept of an ad valorem tax? Because this is getting complicated.
Mr. Nelson?
Through the chair.
I'm not sure. Is this a
rhetorical question? It's sort of a rhetorical question, I guess. There's an equity question that in the case of what we heard from the fire chief, I think he said half the volunteers own their property and the other half do not. So those that are renters would not be eligible for this benefit. And that becomes an equity issue. And just we've opened that argument with exemptions to property tax. I happen to be over 65, so I enjoy a property tax exemption, but somebody who is has not made it to 65 yet, they have to pay property taxes. Or if I went and rented an apartment, I would not be eligible. So it's based on what I do rather than who I am or what I am. And there seems to be an equity issue that we're ignoring.
So, Mr. Nelson, if you would like to respond to that, great. I am seeing it more as a comment than a question. But if you can add something to the context there, that would be, I think, welcome.
Right. And go ahead.
Through the chair, Dan Nelson, state assessor, Representative Prax, these exemptions and optional exemptions do shift the tax burden to those that do not qualify for those burdens.
Okay.
Or for paying that tax burden.
Yeah.
And having that exemption.
Yeah. Thank you. I just wanted to get that out there so we are officially thinking about that.
Okay. I think it's valuable additional consideration. So with that in mind, I think that we've reached the end of our discussion on this bill for today. So we're going to set House Bill 286 aside, and that will conclude our business for today. Please remember the amendment deadline for HB 216 is noon, Friday, February 20th. And we've scheduled a placeholder meeting for Thursday in case our budget subcommittees are unable to meet. This meeting will be canceled if they meet as planned. And seeing no further business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned. It is 9:23 a.m.